Hi, welcome back to She Does Stand Up 2. I'm Matthew Broussard.
And I'm Laura Sogard.
Some upcoming dates. I'm going to be at the San Francisco Punchline on May 18th through 21st. Exciting guest today. First day in the studio, first of all.
Yeah, first day in the studio. We're upgrading because we really wanted to capture every second of this interview.
Yes.
I'm really excited about
this
one.
We also wanted to not have to realize how poorly we'd recorded it and how my voice is blowing out the speakers and you were whispering.
Frantic sound editing.
Yes. GarageBand can only do so much. And speaking of technical expertise, our guest today is Brian Morton.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. This is awesome.
I'm fired up.
New studio. This is great. It's a beautiful space.
It's nice. Can I try to say your resume and you tell me what I get wrong?
Yeah, go ahead.
You recently were hired as, I believe, among other things, social media for the New York Comedy
Director of Operations.
Director of Operations, among other things.
President of Operations.
But what matters to me is Instagram Reels. Director of Operations. You've taken over a lot of things there. What I've seen firsthand is you've taken over the social media page.
Yeah.
You've started
obviously
recording sets.
Obviously one of the most visible.
And you've started posting those sets with great success.
Yes,
Which is exciting for me as a comedian, I think for comedians in general. You came by way of Laugh Factory Chicago and Zany Chicago, where you also were.
Yeah, yeah. You want to keep going? I was.
And the door, originally a door guy? Was that it? Okay, so what did I get wrong?
No, you did well.
Besides your job title.
There's no additional details to provide.
All right, end of episode. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for having me. So I do have a social media person named Bonnie. She runs all of our social media. She's great at that. But it was like my vision of how we're going to do it.
Okay.
They brought me on in September. So New York Comedy Club brought me on September 1st. Mm-hmm. Was my first day, which was... is great. I've known Emilio probably since...
Owner of the club.
Yeah, Emilio, the owner of New York Comedy Club, since 2015-ish, 2016, something like that, I met him. And we've just maintained a great relationship since then. And I originally, before that, was at Zany's, and I was there for 2 years. Most of that was during the pandemic, so I started in August of 2019, and then obviously
you were like, "It's gonna be great."
Aww. I know. I was like, "Here we go!" And then so, but that was fun too because we had to figure out how to still be relevant and do things during that, which was.
So those are very different clubs, Zany's and Laugh Factory. So Laugh Factory Chicago, for those not familiar, is one of the only showcase clubs in America outside of LA or New York, which means it's one of the only clubs that doesn't feature headliner weekends.
Right.
All the shows feature comics doing about 10 to 15 minute sets each, which means
all of the shows there.
All of the shows.
Okay.
I mean, someone might set up like a one night headliner, but they don't bring people in town to headline for a 6-show weekend. It's about local talent or whoever happens to be in town.
I would say in my 6.5 years, we had less than 20 headliners.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And they sustain it. And that's it takes a city of comedy to sustain a club like that. Atlanta's the next closest thing, the Laughing Skull in Atlanta, which seats 90 people in the back of a burger shop.
They have all the posters on the windows outside, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I've only walked by there.
That's, yes. Yeah. And they still do headliner, but they've transitioned it into a local showcase club. And I go there, I did my album there, and that was it's a really cool spot.
It's been around forever.
It's been around a long time. They do things very well there.
Yeah. So Laugh Factory, when I got there in 2013, they opened in 2012. I got there in 2013. And one of the first things I started at the door guy, and then I moved up to become a night manager, and then I became the GM. And I begged
swiftly.
It was over 18 months.
Yeah, that is swiftly.
Yeah. It was luck too. People moved out.
Right.
And then, but Curtis, that's still there, he's the president of operations there. We approached Jamie Masada, the owner, and we're like, hey, we want to put cameras in. We think that this is going to be important for all of us. Mm-hmm. We should have all these clips because they were posting a lot on YouTube at that point.
It
was before Instagram was anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, did Instagram even exist at that point?
No.
A couple years later. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So they were on YouTube all the time. So I was like, I want to get some shine for these Chicago comics. We're not showing anything from Chicago really. Let's put some stuff up for these comics so then it'll help everybody.
Right.
So then, he's like, how much money do you need? I was like, 10,000. He's like, okay, here's 5. Figure it out.
Good strategy right there. Good scrappy.
Let's do it. So then, eBay helped out a lot with that. So I bought some used stuff and we set everything up. I hired a camera guy to come in and shoot 2 nights a week. So, cause I still am a novice when it comes to camera stuff. I was able to do things at, this is my third club setting up cameras, but it's still like learning everything.
Right.
But yeah, and then one of the coolest things that came from it was we had a couple clips that when Instagram did come out, go viral.
Yeah.
And from Laugh Factory, Chicago. And one of the coolest things is I came here, there's a comedian named Sarah Perry. She's in Chicago. She's great. And I came here for SNL one weekend. And we went to SNL, and Sarah and I went together. And at the SNL after party, she got recognized.
Wow.
From a clip. And this was,
that's
so cool.
This
is like five years ago.
Right.
4 or 5 years ago. I was just like, it was like insane. I was like, that just is, yeah, it was like, it's proof that it works. So ever since then, I've just been so focused on making sure that those things exist. And then when I started at New York Comedy Club, that was the first day. I was like, hey, we need this. And they're like, okay. And they approved it, which was like,
that's awesome.
Which is great.
Emilio has a very good, he has a business mind. He understands the investment and growth.
And that one seems quite logical, where it's like, it's just a win-win. You get to help the comics out. You get to increase the visibility of the New York Comedy Club brand.
You can build 100,000 followers for your club's Instagram
page. The goal is to fill
that
seats.
That is my goal. That's weird that you said that.
Number. Oh, really?
My actual goal is 100K by this time next year.
That's awesome.
All right, guys. Timestamp that. Set the reminders.
I think you're doing the stuff to get there.
Yeah.
I just remember just a piece of history for me was when I got to LA in 2013, and it was those YouTube clips on the Laugh Factory LA or Hollywood YouTube clips were such a like a prize. It was as close as you could have to a credit
100%.
Without being on TV. If you're like, oh, that person has a
They built up their YouTube so well. They had like a million subscribers like pretty quickly.
It was a smart era. No one else was doing it.
Yep.
It made Chris D'Elia's career. His drunk girls bit was from the Laugh Factory, and that was that did more for him than Whitney or Undateable.
Well, I think like Jamie, he saw Russell Peters, because Russell Peters did so well from YouTube and just things like that. And Jamie is like a person that pays attention to, he just listens to people.
Yeah.
He's very, very good at listening to people and like to see what's next. So
he's a character as well.
100%.
He's a Persian Jew from Hollywood.
Well, it's crazy about
There's
him.
Stories about
he's
him.
Like
he's a fun guy.
He's dyslexic. He still can't read well. He had to teach himself how to do that. He came here at like 14 with nothing, started doing stand up at 16, and then just stayed with it, and then ended up opening a club. But yeah, I mean, he's got a crazy story. He's done it all. That guy's done it all. I've had three very unique bosses, like Bert as well. So Bert Haas, like, from Zanies.
Yeah.
So he was my boss as well. So it's just like I've had three all different types of bosses.
Right.
Wow.
Which has been fun. It's been cool to be in this industry like that.
Yeah. So
also
maybe
famous Laugh Factory clips. Michael Richards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also a Laugh Factory clip.
It always gets
not shot
up.
As well.
It always gets brought up.
Really did a lot for his career.
Yeah.
Maybe we could back it up a little bit. What brought you into the why would you spend time with comedians? We're all mentally ill.
Yeah. Well, so
what's
am
that
I.
all about? Yeah.
So
perfect.
So
okay.
That's
so that's
why
that makes sense then.
I kind of got into comedy later. I liked it a little bit in high school. Like everybody liked Dane Cook, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm 36. So it was like right at that era, like Dane Cook was super
MySpace.
Popular.
Yeah.
All of that was, you know, and like Mitch Hedberg, just like things that were on Premium Blend, but I wasn't super into it. I watched Comic View a little bit, but wasn't super into it. I have one of my siblings did stand up, but only open mics. And I just wasn't into it at all.
You were like, you're bad.
Yeah.
No. still do it?
No. I went to one of their open mics at like a wing place. And I was just like, yeah, no.
It's very depressing.
I grew up in upstate New York.
Okay.
Yeah, in Utica, which I don't know if you've ever been there, but
super. Is that
terrible.
Where Jordan Jensen's from?
I have no idea.
College
no,
town,
I think
though,
she
right?
said Ithaca.
Ithaca, my
yeah,
bad.
Another
yeah, people,
Ithaca.
People confuse those, but Utica's much worse than Ithaca. So, yeah. It is a college town. There is a Utica College, which is part of Syracuse, and then there's a community college.
Nice.
So that's why it's a college town, but other
and
than
then
that,
apparently
it's
a wing place.
Stuff.
It's a heroin town, if anything.
Oh,
if that's what kind of town it is, it's a...
Great comedy.
Now you're hearing Cocaine City.
Yeah. It used to be like mafia ran, and then the mafia died out, and then it's just nothing now.
Wow.
But yeah, so I... after, you know, I was in the military, I was in the Air Force for 4 years. And when I left the Air Force, I moved to Chicago. And but before, so while I was in the Air Force, my stepdad took his own life, and it drove me down like a pretty dark depression. You know, my stepdad raised me, so he was like my father. So like that drove me down like a pretty dark depression. And I found, I was living with three guys that were in the military, and I found like happiness when we'd watch like Seth Rogen movies. So like Seth Rogen was super popular then, so we'd watch like Superbad and Knocked Up and like just his popular movies at that point. And one day I went to one of my roommates worked at a Family Video, and I went to the video store and I rented two comedy specials, and I was like, oh, let's try to watch stand-up comedy tonight, you know, it'd be something that maybe we like, I don't know.
Which, by the way, how crazy that was the only way you could watch stand-up back then.
I'm 34. You go to Blockbuster, you're like flicking through.
Yeah. You'd have to wait for an infomercial so you could call a number and order a DVD.
Yeah. So I rented it and I brought it home, and they were like, what the fuck is this? This is going to be fucking dumb. Like, we don't want to watch this. Let's watch another movie. And I was like, no, fuck, let's put it on. So put it on. The specials, which like today, people are like, what the fuck? But it was Joe Rogan Live. This is 2009. So it was before a podcast, before his podcast existed. This is Joe Rogan Live, which was like
Fear Factor days.
It was like he did like a Netflix special before Netflix was Netflix. So
it was still like delivery. Quite literally delivery.
Yes. Yeah. So he had his Netflix special. It was like 2007. Probably he did.
Was this the one where he started out in a car talking about how mold on an orange is like humanity?
In the back of the cab.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think
so. Yeah.
It'd be great to bring Joe Rogan out as, you know him from Netflix.
You know him from DVDs that come in the mail. Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking about like we're all on a planet spinning through space or whatever. Yeah, like whatever.
Sounds on brand.
So then I rented that, and then Louis C.K.'s Shameless, I think. It was his 2006 special was, 2006, 2007, whatever that was. And then we watched it, and watching my roommates watch it was amazing to me. I was like, they were fucking dying laughing after coming from like, fuck this shit, we don't want to watch it, to like, this is amazing. Like, we should definitely like watch more stand up. So then I was like, oh, let me buy tickets for everybody. So I saw Joe Rogan was coming to Columbus, Ohio, to the Funny Bone there, which is like an amazing club. And I saw that he was coming, so I bought all my roommates tickets, and then none of them wanted to go. So I was like, but I took other people, and then the very first show I ever saw live was Ari Shaffir opened up for Rogan.
Whoa!
Damn.
Yeah, it was March of 2009, and like since then I've just been hooked. So I started going to shows all the time. I moved to Chicago in 2010. I got out of the military. I moved to Chicago. And then I found this thing called Comedians You Should Know, which it's here. Yeah. It's here in New York now.
It's here in New York.
But it started in Chicago.
Yep.
And so, like, I got to see.
If you're in New
York,
we've
talked about it on the pod being like the best alt show in town.
I got to do it earlier this year. I was very excited.
It was really cool.
Step for me.
So I got to see the first comic that I like fell in love with was Drew Michael in Chicago. And I was like, this guy's brain just works different. I don't know if you guys ever watched Drew Michael.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, the way he thinks is so different. So,
is he from Chicago?
Yeah. So he started doing stand there. So then I saw him. I saw Mike Leibovitz. I saw
Mike's great.
Joe Kilgallen. I saw Junior Stopka. There was like all these people that I was like, these comics are, Marty DeRosa. I was like, these comics are so fucking good. And then it was $5 on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I was like probably their favorite person, because I was in culinary school at the time, and I was bringing like five or six people from my school every single Wednesday, every other Wednesday.
They're like, do you want to go up?
Like, yeah, like just new people all the time. Like that. Like we're just coming to watch the show.
That's a dream audience member right there.
Yeah. And then I was in love with it. And then the restaurant I was working at, like everything stopped working out. And I was like, what do I really want to do? And some point, like in 2010, I befriended Joey Diaz, the comedian Joey Diaz.
Yeah.
And we would talk on the phone a lot. And he would be like, why don't you just go into comedy? He's like, nobody is actually in the business side that loves stand-up. He's like, you should go. He's like, everybody that works in this is like a TGI Fridays waiter. And he's like, they're like a manager from Olive Garden that just got fired and saw the comedy club was hiring. So he's like, but nobody gives a shit about stand-up that actually works in it, especially then. I think it's shifted a lot in the last like 6 to 7 years.
Easier access to it.
Also like podcasting is so big now. Yeah. It's just like people, that's what you mean by that? Yeah, like, like,
well, yeah, you can like, you didn't have to go like fight your way through a video store to, right. to get
exactly.
Now it's like, oh, you just open Instagram.
Everybody knows about it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So it's more competitive getting jobs like yours now, you would say, or?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think because you have like just people are way more knowledgeable on it. Mm-hmm. I think even owners probably mm-hmm. of the spaces know more about it.
I feel like that's happened to stand up. Like that's what happened in the last 10 years in stand up where there's just more guides. There's more exactly. resources to learn quickly how to do it well.
There's more guides for everything.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, the advent of the internet and well, internet, but like, Google. I mean,
this fucking podcast is.
Yeah.
Well, I was listening to, I can't remember whose podcast it was, but it's a writer from New York Times. No, he's great. I just can't remember. I listened to one episode. It's a writer from the New York Times that he does like stand-up based podcast.
Uh-huh.
But he was talking about how this is the second comedy boom. He's like, the first comedy boom was about the clubs and everything was like there's 6,000 clubs opened.
Yeah.
And he's like, but now
Tuesday through Sunday rooms.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like, now this is the second comedy boom, but it's about the comedians instead of the
Hell
clubs.
Yeah.
He's like, so now you can be a comedian and blow up
mm-hmm.
versus before it wasn't like that. Everything was about the club.
Yeah.
So, but yeah,
man, you really missed the good boom.
No, I love it. I love it. I prefer this boom to me. Like,
why is that?
Because I love New York Comedy Club, but my passion doesn't revolve around the comedy club. Like, I want to try to make every comedy club better for comedians,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I don't care about the club. Like, the club is just a brand, and believe me, the club that hires me, I will put my heart and soul into it, and I will support 100% because I care about comedy.
Yeah.
I think that's a very symbiotic relationship, too. Like, if the comedians know that you care about comedy, they're going to want to support that club
exactly.
more.
Exactly.
It's, yeah,
and if you make the place, you make it a place where comedians want to be. That's always been my idea. You make this a place where comedians want to be, and then the club will succeed.
Yeah. Because then they talk about it on podcasts.
100%.
And yeah. There's so many clubs that put the comics first, and I can see why that's in the short term wouldn't seem like a profitable strategy. You look at like Comedy and Magic Club. I don't think there's a club that treats comics better than that. It's in Hermosa Beach. You have to be clean to get in. It's really hard to get in.
Jay Leno performs there.
Performs every Sunday, and you show up, and you get you can order whatever you want on the menu, whether or not you're on the show. You go in the green room. You finish your set, and this was in 2014. You finish your set, you go sit down, and then a sound person comes in with a DVD of the set you just did. This was before, and then they switch to USB drives. All these things without asking. And it's an immensely successful club. And they are bleeding money every night on DVDs and entrees for comedians, and yet it's...
Well, I'm sure they're not bleeding money.
But yeah, it's a small sacrifice. You know?
It's a small sacrifice in the long term.
Yeah. Yeah, like we don't have a kitchen, but I put snacks in at the club. So
yeah,
it's like... But yeah, so Joey Diaz, to go back to that, Joey Diaz was like, hey, why don't you get into the industry? He's like, you like it. So then I saw an ad for Laugh Factory. So I applied, and then I got in, and I started at Door. And then, like I said, I worked my way up, and then... Like six and a half years there, Zanies approached me and they're like, hey, do you want to work for Zanies? And then we talked it out. We came to a number that we agreed upon. And then I approached Jamie Masada with that number. And he was like, you know, he's like, I love you. He's like, I want you to succeed. He's like, just go for that. He's like, I can't afford that right now. We're still like a club that is, they just opened in 2012 and they, you know, they spent like $7 million on the renovation of it. So it's like, but I think the
Laugh Factory Chicago is 2012.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like I said, like Curtis and I put our fucking heart and soul into that place.
Yeah.
And like we really, it went from only being open four nights a week, if that, to seven nights a week, multiple shows every night. And it's, you know, you've performed there. I take it. Like, I don't.
Yeah. I love it.
Like, I
love
feel like
it. It's a big room.
I feel like I met you there, but it was like so long ago.
Yeah.
That, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's a huge room, 330, 350 seats. Yeah, it's a big, big room.
Yeah.
And selling out multiple shows. And yeah, yeah.
Wow.
But that was cool. I think going to Zanies, too, was one of the best decisions I made just for my own career. Because before Curtis, my partner was always the face of the club. So everybody knows Curtis and nobody knew me. I did all of the... like Curtis did all the booking and the marketing side, and then I did all of like the club side.
Right.
So like the hiring and firing and the ordering and all that shit. So it also showed me that I could do this somewhere else. So I helped with Zany's a lot too. And like, we helped their social media grow a ton. And now they have a camera system and that's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And they give the clips to their comics and stuff like that. So, and I helped also just open the doors there because it becomes such like a small amount of people that actually work that club locally. And right. I just opened it up to everybody. And I was like, let's bring in all the people that got really, really good at Laugh Factory. Let's bring them over here. So then it just brought all the communities together. The South Side got to perform more at Zany's because they weren't ever performing at Zany's. Mm-hmm. And so it made everybody in Chicago a lot closer, which has been really cool to see.
So would you say you helped Zany's become more of a developmental club?
I mean, it's always been a developmental club. Okay. For sure. I mean, you look at like Pat McGann, he started there. Do you know Pat McGann?
Yes.
He tours, he opens for Sebastian, and he just did Caroline's. He just headlined four nights at Caroline's, and he's just blown up. But he sold out the Vic Theater in Chicago. It's like, jeez, he sold out three shows on a Sunday.
Nice. Wow.
He did like a 4 p.m. show that sold out. It was like insane. Insane. Like, when you hear like a Sunday sold out, you're like, what? And then you hear a 4 p.m., you're like, that's insane. Okay. Yeah.
So what were the differences from going from a showcase club to a headliner club? If I guess Zany's also, Chicago is such a big scene that their Monday through, you know, Sunday through Wednesday shows probably our showcase shows.
No, they were just doing pretty much strictly headliner. They, you know, they did, I would say, probably 2 to 3 showcase shows a month. But Bert,
that's not many. Yeah,
Bert, the old president there, vice president of whatever his title was. He retired now, but he was very like specific about making sure Zany's was something different than the other, because there's Comedy Bar there too, and they do showcases sometimes and headliners sometimes. But he wanted to make sure that Zany's was strictly headliner. But I changed that a bit just because I want to give more options to comedians. Like, I think that's important for all of comedy. Like, you got to be able to get up on every single stage.
Well, I also think that maybe I'm naive, but it sounds like if it was a headliner club, then the draw is going to be obviously the headliner. So Correct. It's a lot of people who are coming directly for that person. Whereas if it's just, you know, a showcase, then the draw is the club brings good people in.
Yeah,
you don't necessarily,
I would say,
know.
Because Zany's has been around, it's like it was opened in 1978, so it's 44 years old. It's very, very old. They were able to have a pretty built-in following no matter what. So like, I would say they're selling, depending on the night, 30% of the tickets by themselves without, you could put anybody on stage and 30%
Someone's
of the tickets are going.
Fans of the club,
just for the club.
That's awesome when a club can do that. That's a sign of success.
But my biggest thing was just get new blood in there, new people, you know, people that deserve it, you know, people that they weren't looking at before. So that was a huge part of what I wanted to do there.
Huh. And how is it different working at a New York showcase club?
So then the pandemic happened. I mean, maybe before that, like, what were the adjustments you had to make through the pandemic? Did you guys do Zoom shows for?
So we did, yes, but we did it differently. Right. So I didn't do like you're sitting in front of a computer zooming. I set up like an actual, on the stage, I had a TV with everybody that you could look at. I pumped in the crowd noise through the speakers.
Wow.
So I just wanted to like take it to that next level. James Webb, he's a guy that's out of Chicago. And him and I worked on that together. And Calvin Evans, he was the, I don't know if you know Calvin, he's an amazing comedian. He hosted, the first one we did was on New Year's. And it ended up doing like really well. I think we sold like 400 something tickets to it.
Nice.
Which is like really, really good for a New Year's show, just staying home, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, we tried to make it more interactive. So it wasn't just like you're sitting in front of a computer at home. But, you know, things that I did, like we did like a, there's this alcohol in Chicago called Malort. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Mm-mm. It's the worst tasting alcohol ever, but it's like a badge of honor. It's like a badge of honor. They know they're bad. Like, it's on purpose. Like, it's everybody in Chicago loves it. It's like, if you come there, you have to drink it. It's that type of thing.
It's like just, Taka, maybe?
It's made from like wormwood and like the aftertaste just sits in your mouth forever.
It's like bum wine? What kind of?
I don't know exactly what it is.
Chicago is like, we just like to suffer. Long winters, shitty liquor.
It's gross, but it's like people, they make like cocktails with it at most of the bars you go to. And like, it's a specific Chicago drink. But I made like a drinking game that the comics could play through Zoom called Truth or Malort. It's like Truth or Drink, but with Malort.
Oh, and, you really, yeah.
And so, like, yeah, you have to.
You want to answer the question.
Exactly, because it tastes so bad. So, like, we did things like that during the pandemic. I started a merch store for them. Just things to try to, like, make money to come in. So that's, like, the adjustments that I made for them.
Wow.
But we didn't close down as long as New York did. So we were able to come back to like limited capacity by February. So it wasn't too bad.
Still 11 months, right?
Where did you guys do any outdoors?
Yeah, like March. Yeah. Well, no, sorry. So, okay. So we went from, I think we opened back up in the summer too.
Yeah, probably did some sort of. Yeah.
So no, we weren't outdoors though. We did indoor. And I think we opened back up from like,
it's so, especially that period, it's just so, I'm like, what summer was that?
I think we closed for like 4 months, 3 or 4 months, and then we opened for like 3 months and then closed back down again. And then we opened officially again in February, and then they haven't closed since.
Got it. Yeah, so, 2020 and 2021 are conjoined in my memory.
Yeah. They seem so long
time.
And so like,
We were doing the shows in the park.
Yeah.
So at that point, it was dark times.
Yeah.
Did you have a distaste for regular Zoom shows? Was that...
You're like amateur hour.
No, it's not. It's not, dude. Like, that's what I love about comedy is that you can kind of just figure it out. It's like you're never gonna stop. So it's not that it's a distaste. It's just like I want to try to provide the best experience possible, and I know that it was not the best experience possible doing Zoom shows. So it's like, what can I do to try to enhance that and make it better? So that's why we did our version of it, which like there's this big venue in LA that did it with all the cameras, all the TV screens. I don't know.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah. Yes.
So like ours was just like a version of that, but only with one huge TV screen.
Yeah.
So it was definitely better than nothing.
Yeah.
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 No, it's very appreciated to give something other than that hell of putting your laptop on top of three ottomans.
Yeah. and like then, that's the other thing about the Midwest too, is like, oh, I don't know if it was like that here, but you could travel like an hour and probably still do some bar show somewhere. Like, you could go to Indiana where they're a little looser. Like, you could go to Wisconsin.
Like, what's COVID?
Kansas was...
Haven't gotten newspapers yet.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Is that an Alaska reference?
Barely.
Okay. That's a long story.
So then you ended up coming to New York. What spurred that?
So Amelia reached out to me. Like I said, I've had a relationship for a long time. He reached out to me. He's like, hey, would you ever be interested in coming to New York?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah. I was like, I mean, I grew up in upstate New York. I moved to New York City when I was 18, which is like awful. Like, it was so fucking hard for me. Like,
I bet.
I moved from a town of like nobody to moving to New York City. So like I only lasted here like 6 months and then ended up moving back home.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was just like,
absolutely. Don't blame me there.
So like, there's this part of me, like
small
that,
town to,
yeah,
that's
exactly,
like movies.
Exactly.
You're only living boy in New York.
There was like a part of me though, that felt like, you know, I wanted to come back now that I've matured, that I'm like, I can actually do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's when he asked me, I was like, yeah, like that would definitely be something I'm interested in. So then we talked, they actually interviewed Curtis from Laugh Factory as well. So they were interviewing both of us. And then I think like two other people. No, I think Curtis probably turned down the job. I don't know. But like, dude, Curtis is fucking great. He's a bad motherfucker. Like, he's really good at his job. So, but yeah, we went back and forth from like June until August. And then the first or second week of August, he was like, first week of August, he's like, the job is yours if you want it. Do you want to make this happen? We need to do this sooner than later. And I was like, give me like 48 hours to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then within 48 hours, I said yes. I talked to Zanies and I told them, I was like, I'm going to move. Like, I'll give you guys like 3.5 weeks to find a replacement for me. And then, I moved out here 3.5 weeks later.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he's back. Round two.
it's been more than 6 months this time.
Been more than 6 months.
Yes!
I beat it.
Hell yeah.
You had to transition to like a medium-sized city first. I guess Chicago's not a medium.
Chicago's a large city.
It's like
Chicago scares me.
I love cities. So like, it wasn't that. It's just, 18, you're an idiot.
Of course.
It's hard,
I cannot imagine doing that.
We talked about that. If we had gone to college in New York,
I'd be dead.
You'd be dead.
I would 100% be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been like traffic.
And also
somewhere.
I had like no money, and then living with so I lived in the New Yorker Hotel.
What? Who are you, Anna Delvey?
It's like, yeah, I don't Is that in Inventing Anna?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
It's on 34th.
No, this check should clear.
It's on 34th and 8th, but which is like right in the heart of Midtown. They took out like 7 floors out of it and turned them into dorm rooms. I don't know if it's still like that, but it's like we took basically like a hotel room and they put 2 people in a tiny ass hotel room and turned it into a dorm room. So that's where I lived. Which is also crazy, but I was living with all these like rich kids from Long Island, and I was like trying to compete with them and like go out at night and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can't, like, it's impossible. So yeah, I ended up dropping out of school and moving back home, and then now I'm back. It's been longer than 6 months. It's been great.
You're still living at the New Yorker.
Yeah, I do live at the New Yorker. I go to the TikTok diner every day. No, I love it here though. The comedy scene here is just so fun. And then the access you get to the people that I've met, like, it's just a different level. I'm playing on a different level now, and that's been really cool to see.
Right.
Yeah. Like, even just, I was telling you guys, I went to see Andrew Schultz at Radio City, like, got hooked up, went to Radio City, they have like a private space there, which I didn't know about, called the Roxy Room, which is like, I had access to that, like, and then ended up meeting the events manager from Madison Square Garden, and like,
awesome.
Just like connections, it's
big leagues.
A lot different than Chicago's cool, and like, I definitely met a lot of people in Chicago, but New York's just a whole other level of it.
Yeah, any of the international component, and there's,
and that's the interesting part about like the New York clubs, the showcase clubs, is that Schultz, I don't know, radio, he sold out Radio City, I'm guessing twice.
Yeah,
and I'm sure the 12,000
seats, 6,000 seats each show.
Yeah, I'm sure tickets were more than $15. Yet you can also see Andrew Schultz do 15 minutes for the price of a weeknight ticket at New York Comedy Club.
He did 30 minutes on Thursday.
Right.
Exactly.
And that's just the thing you can see. And you can see comics of his level just popping in
100%.
All around town. And you might have been doing comedy for 4 years and happen to be on a show with someone like that.
Yep. And that's
only
why.
That's the weirdest part.
Yeah.
When you're all of a sudden like, wait, what?
I
followed John Oliver the other day. what the fuck's happening right now?
But that's great.
It was sick.
It's got to be so motivating.
Yeah, and terrifying. But yeah, it was.
Awesome.
I mean, it was
too,
one
like
of those
like
one of those memories. I was like, okay.
Motivating for him. He's like, I can't get buried by this 4-year comic.
this tall woman. What the hell?
No, it's great though. That was like one of the original things with Comedians You Should Know is they would like jack the comedians from Zanies that were headlining for the weekend.
Yeah, of course.
And
they
would put them up on
Absolutely.
Wednesday because they would have to come in the day before to do press. So they were doing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at Zanies, and then the Wednesday before they would come in to do press, and then, you know, they would. So I would see a lot of headliners for $5. Like, I saw Bobby Kelly and like TJ Miller, Hannibal, like all these people for $5, where I'm like, oh, this is amazing.
I mean, could you imagine just going to like a local music open mic and Bruno Mars is like, hey, can I do 2 songs?
Right.
Exactly.
Like,
I mean,
comedy is, we're so desperate. You can see us for really cheap if you want to. And in a lot of cities, that
just
comic,
reach out. We'll do a Zoom.
Comics You Should Know is a great example of one of those shows where it's like, even if no one on the show is famous, in 5 years, 2 or 3 of them will be.
It's so fun
to see them at that level when they're hungry and more experimental. And when my friends are coming to New York to see shows, I'm always like, go see 2. Go see 1 at a club.
Yeah.
And then go find some Brooklyn one that's at most $10.
Yep.
And you will enjoy both for very different reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the club scene here, everything's cool. I haven't gone to a ton of shows outside of the club just because I've been so focused on the club since I've been here. But eventually I will go to more. But it's great.
Did you see divisions between the alt and the club scene in Chicago?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. But that's why I love Laugh Factory so much, is we brought everybody in.
Yeah.
So that was the coolest part about having that ability to be able to run a club with Curtis. We both had that same vision of opening it up to every single person, no matter if you're alt or not. Like, yes, you need to still be able to do this room. Like, you can't be crazy.
There need to be laughs.
Yeah, you can't just be some crazy experimental thing. But we took more chances than anybody. Like, that's one thing about us, is that we will take chances.
Yeah. And that's, the division between the alt and the club scene, it's always made out to me more than it is. And usually the stuff that's brewing in the alt scene will become the club scene within 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, like, all right, Sarah Sherman's an example. Do you know Sarah?
Yeah, she's at the Cellar now,
Yeah, so, but, like,
Sarah Squirm.
She was and was very alt. So,
In the best way.
In the best way, yes.
Yeah.
And so, but she was working Laugh Factory, so she's now Chicago. So it's like, it's just, that type of comic, but also at the same time, Chris Redd, who is a club comic.
Yes.
So it's just the same thing, mm-hmm. you know, both on SNL now.
Yes.
So we have like, there's like four or five people that were at the Laugh Factory consistently that are on SNL right now.
That's crazy.
That's wild.
That's great.
What are your, if you are comfortable divulging, what are your plans with New York Comedy Club? What are your goals?
Goals? Well, social media is huge. My biggest thing is I want to help comedians get famous, because I think that helps everybody. So famous, whatever that is, like when I look at fame, I'm thinking you can go somewhere and sell out a club. That's right. How I look at fame.
Selling moving tickets.
Yeah, I want you to be able to sell tickets. I heard about your four pillars too. I like that.
Yes.
Whole thing.
Right.
But selling tickets, I think, is like the biggest thing. And I want to just try to help as many comedians as I can with their social media and just try to, because I think it's good for everybody. You know, if they're more popular, like there's like, I think Ashley Austin Morris is fucking great. I think yeah. she's a great comic. And I'm trying to help her with her social media. It's just people like that that like are already amazing comics. And if I can just help them a little bit with their social media presence.
Yeah. It's such a different skill set.
100%.
It's the wildest thing seeing people who are just unbelievably funny and they just do not know what to do on social media
yeah.
at all. Like, you know.
Yours is good, though.
He's recently put in effort to like actually, you know, and it's paid off.
I'm
it's
like obsessed
dividends.
With fonts. Like, yeah. I will yeah, spend an hour.
We had a discussion about this once.
Being like, how many words should I have on the screen at one time?
Yeah. Yeah. Matthew's so funny because I was telling him forever to do this. I was like, you have clips that have clear punch. Like, this is, you're going to do well online. He's like, no. Mm-hmm. And I was like, your brain works in such a detailed manner. You're going to become obsessed with it. And now here we are.
Yeah. It's really fun. It's really fun.
Once again, I'm just
out,
trying
like,
to say Laura was
video.
Right,
yes.
And you should always listen to her.
Wow, what a surprise. Laura was right about something. Yeah, but there's, and it's, I started comedy in 2011, and there was still that naive belief of get good enough and they'll come find you.
Yeah.
That's dead forever now. But I
and that's
think
what
that's
I was saying.
Done.
It's the this is the rise of the comedians. Versus
yes.
you, there's no gatekeeper anymore. You are your own gatekeeper,
yeah. which is
on the
really cool.
Yeah. The good side is that you can build all this stuff for yourself. The downside is you have to build all this stuff for yourself. So
I always reference Mr. Beast. Do you guys know Mr. Beast?
No.
Okay, Mr. That's Beast is.
Wait, you.
Oh,
about this.
With the silver face. No.
No.
I'm sorry.
So Mr.
We're
Beast.
We're just gonna keep guessing random shit.
Mr. Beast. Mr. Beast to me is like. One of the most important people in social media, in all of content right now.
Uh-oh.
He is 23. He lives in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
He's never left North Carolina. And he has, I don't know how many, he's got to be close to 100 million subscribers on YouTube now. And he just did this.
That's a lot.
He just did
this. Let's do that math. That's one out of, a billion wait. I mean, 100 million goes to a billion 10 times, and there's 8 billion people in the world. So one in 80 people in the world is subscribed
Holy
to him.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
And that's just
That
on,
might be wrong,
that's
but
just
either way,
on,
it sounds
That's
cool.
just on one of his channels. Just a sidebar, he actually, for all of his videos now, he's put them in every language, and he's hiring... he does like a lot of cool videos, but he's hiring like the biggest voice actors from like... He chose the guy in China who does... Spider-Man. So he's the voice of Spider-Man is doing the voiceover for all his videos for YouTube now. And then he did that with like Brazil. So all in Portuguese are like a famous
it's a Brazilian
a famous Portuguese yeah. voiceover actor is now doing Mr. Beast's videos in Portuguese.
It's gotta be pretty cool.
Portuguese
be
like, Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, exactly. I was like pick who you want to be.
Millions of subscribers on those videos too. So they're
wow.
just translating. And he has all these different videos, but the biggest thing about it is that he's able to do all of this from North Carolina. So
right.
it's like eventually the idea of like, yes, you need the club aspect to do get good at your craft, but for social media, you can do it from anywhere and be good at it from anywhere. So it's like he to me is what is next, and people like you guys don't even know who he is, but now you will, and now you
yeah.
look him up. And
we're one of 80.
He just had his
chef on the podcast.
He just had his Squid Games video. He did this reenactment of Squid Games, and I think it's like at 240 or 250 million now. And like just to compare, Netflix only has 220 million subscribers.
Netflix is like, how are we getting our ass kicked by this random
this video,
guy?
This video cost him $3.2 million to make. He came from no money. He started all this himself. Like he was able to flip
That's
sponsorships
so cool.
and everything. Like he's super fascinating. So like him,
I'm cover him.
Him to me, him to me is like, what is next? And it just shows people what is possible. So what is next for what I want to do? One, I want to have, fuck it, I'll say it. I want to have a social media management company for comedians.
Oh my God, you would, that, there's a market.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Two, like, we're opening more clubs. We just opened California Comedy Club.
How'd it go?
Went really well. Launched.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're still waiting. There's a neighbor. There's, I don't know.
California's being California.
There's just an issue. There's an issue with the liquor licensing, but it's gonna happen, and then everything will be smooth sailing from then. Yep.
Do heroin first.
Yeah, now. Yeah. Just heroin. We have another club that we're about
2 spoon minimum.
We have another space that we're going to look at tomorrow, which is very exciting. And then I think we're just gonna continue to grow. I also want to just increase like our own social media for YouTube. I want to have a very strong YouTube presence. We got 3,000 subscribers over the last 5 weeks, which has been really big, and I'm just going to keep trying to push that. Yeah. And
so one YouTube subscriber is worth like 10 Instagram subscribers followers. It's just such a legitimate.
We just hit our first video to hit 1 million on YouTube.
Wow.
Which is great. Nice. Yeah.
If you guys aren't doing YouTube Shorts, you should.
Have they started picking up? I started doing them way like a year ago, and there was they weren't pushing them yet, but now we're back on it. It's interesting because I feel like the clubs are now, you're also having to evolve in the sense of it's no longer, the focus is way less on just the people who are physically coming in to have that show. That show obviously needs to kick ass, right? But there's a production element, there's the social media element, there's so many other things, like people who haven't ever been to New York will have interactions with New York Comedy Club far before they eventually get to buy a ticket and physically come and 100%. See you guys.
And the SEO is already built into our name.
Right. So it's
literally the best name ever for a comedy club.
Yeah, it really
York.
Is.
Like that anybody just searches stand up comedy New York, like we are going to come up first.
Yep.
But
you should just change your name to Cheap Date Night and really see if you can take off.
Things to do.
It's not cheap. That's the only thing. Yeah. It's still New York at the end of the day. But goals are to become the number one club. I'd love that. I'd love to try to figure that out. And like, I'm just going to keep pushing towards it and just keep my head down and keep going. I think
that's awesome.
I think that is doable, especially with what I'm trying to do. Like, across on all platforms in 7 months, we're up like 22,000 followers.
That's fantastic.
Nice. Yeah.
That's really great. You mentioned something earlier. It's this kind of idea of the globalization of comedy. It used to be LA or New York. You really can't make it anywhere. Do you think that's going to change?
Already changing.
It's already changing. You can blow up out of.
Do you know who Charlie Behrens is?
No.
He's huge, and he lives in like Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And like, he's got, I don't know, 500,000 followers. Like, he's massive, and he doesn't leave. Like, he can tour anywhere around, like, he's got like 25 states he can tour in and do very, very well.
Wow.
And that fills up his year, and he sells out everywhere he does
off
nights. Like, it makes all the money in the door, and
wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I think that's already happening.
So don't move to New York if you listen to this.
No, I think you have to move to New York still, especially because that's where you see the people, not that it's competition, but you see inspiration. You see people that are very, very good at stand-up, and you see the hustle mentality or whatever. I hate that term, whatever, but it's like you see what people really are trying to do, and you'll see them. You can become a lot better. It depends, unless you find your niche. Like the globalization, Nigel Ung, do you guys know Nigel?
Yes.
Okay. He just sold out 4 shows at Gramercy Theater last week. Okay. Yeah. He has this character that he does called Uncle Roger. Uncle Roger. Nigel was an open micer in Chicago. Okay. All the time, like just he'd come by every open mic. He figured out his niche. He has 5 million subscribers on YouTube. He's killing it. And now he sells out everywhere he goes for stand-up, and he's doing Netflix as a joke. Like, he does it all. So, I mean, it's just figuring that out. And he lives in London.
And I think the biggest thing that's been a theme of all the people you've mentioned, they've all been working really hard on their social media and their online presence, which, like, right now it's interesting because I'm at that age, in comedy age, where I'm like, do I start posting stuff online, like beyond podcast content?
Yeah. Do you think this is a debate we have?
Like,
is
he's always like, oh, you should.
I always say wait 5 years at least before you start posting your stand up online. But what the fuck do I know? I know, I waited a little while, and now I have more of a backlog, which I'm very grateful for. Whereas if you find and watch all of my clips online, you can come to my show and see at least mostly new material, because I've built enough for that. But maybe, who cares? Maybe once I have a solid 40-second joke, just throw it online. Do you have any?
I think that goes back to like material versus shit that happens during the show. Because there's shit that happens at every show that's different. So, and if you're filming and you catch it happening, like whatever the interaction is with whoever, that can go viral as well, you know? Mm-hmm. And you can get absolutely poster stand-up clips, but if you don't want to burn your material, I would, whatever. I haven't seen you do stand-up, but do you do interaction?
A lot.
So that's what you should be posting.
Yeah, I guess.
Just that one line where you're like, this guy knows what I'm talking about.
But I'm just saying, like,
you guys fucking?
If that's
viral.
If that's not going to, you know, is, you know, because there's shit that happens every single
show. No, you're totally right.
That's what you should be posting. I mean, that.
Well, and one of the other concepts. Yeah, that was the other thing, was trying to.
It's still stand up, but not material.
Yeah.
And you're saying, pivoting over to like podcast content. Like that's been
clips
something
from,
where. Yeah, from
the Too Much Content Studio. Yeah,
from this.
Our first clip to go a million on YouTube was Maddie Smith, and it was a crowd work bit.
Yeah,
it had nothing to do with her material at all.
Right,
it went viral on every single platform.
So you think there's some value to holding on to material?
I have I think that if you post a clip, I feel like. If somebody comes to the show, they're never going to be like, oh, they did that fucking...
That's what I have always thought. Like, no one has gone and memorized everything and then been like, oh, well, he said that actually in 2017.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, Bert Kreischer and...
I would like $5 back off the ticket price.
Yeah, Bert Kreischer and Jim Gaffigan both always close on their most famous bit.
Yeah, if Jim Gaffigan doesn't do Hot Pockets, people would riot. Right.
You talked about them both on last episode. Congratulations about Bert, by the way.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I forgot what I said about Jim.
It's because the JCC Hot Pockets thing.
Oh, yeah, the Mirage. Yeah.
Bert. I've watched Bert develop that bit. The first time I saw Bert was 2011, and I've watched him just develop that bit to be even longer. I don't know how long it is now,
there's certainly a lot of new to it.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. So, yeah, it's just like I look at like fucking Dice, like he would do his nursery rhymes and people would just say them with him, you know?
Yeah. I guess it's like when you go to see a band, you want to maybe see the new stuff, but you're also like, I want
to
sing along.
Nobody wants to see the new stuff.
That's a true point. I'm like, yeah, no, I like music. That's cool.
Ralphie May gave that advice. This is kind of dated advice, but can definitely be upgraded to the technology today. He said, if you're doing morning radio in a city, always do your A material. Don't worry about people coming to the show and hearing it again, because your audience at that show, you might disappoint the 200 people at your show, but you're reaching thousands of people, and you might make a new fan even if they don't come to that show.
And that's the important thing to think about.
Yeah.
That was on his the thing that he did at the store.
Yeah, it was so good.
It's so good. Yeah.
Him and Ari Shaffir both did that sit down at the store, and both were, I don't know if Ari's is still up, but both of those were like, so eye-opening. I need to find those. We need to share those.
They're both. I know that Ralphie's is only on Vimeo for a minute, but now it's on YouTube again. But yeah, like he had this part where he's just like, it's so good for open mic comics, like new comics. Like he talked
the
about
points?
Herding the sheep.
Oh yeah.
And like just going like how you're gonna do your setup, and then your punchline in the middle. Like just with how, because it brings everybody in together. So he's like, set up on your right side, set up on your left side, and then you hit them with the punchline in the middle. So then everybody feels involved when you're telling the joke.
Okay, I do set up to my feet, set up to my feet, and punchline to the wall.
Also to the feet. Assuming there's people on the left and the right.
So many good.
10 other open micers in front of me.
He told an amazing story about Ron White on that too, which is like real wild.
I gotta rewatch that.
Yeah, it's very good.
He had lines in that homework. That are still things I quote. The points game, one joke, 1 point for a new tag, 2 points for reordering, 5 points for a new joke, score 25 points every time you go on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also said the first time you do stand up is the last time you do 5 brand new minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You told me that.
Yeah.
Quoted that to me early on.
We had a fight over that where we went to a new material mic and I like didn't do brand new material. And you're like, what the fuck was that? I'm like, I'm not brave enough for that.
And I. did, and yeah. obviously did terrible.
Yeah. I also remember Ari Shaffir, someone asked him, he was like, should I take acting classes? And Ari was like, yeah, take acting classes. Why the fuck wouldn't you do everything you could to yeah. be better at comedy? Audition for commercials, audition for CW shows. Well, everything is an avenue to get funnier. Yeah.
What, is it going
to
make you worse?
Funnier, plus you're going to get material out of it.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
you're going to have something with the experience that you can write about.
There's so many things I feel like I do in my life now just because I'm like, yeah, it could be funny.
Could be a bit.
Could be a bit.
What did we do? The timeshare pitch?
Yeah. Yeah, Matt and I are going to Cabo.
It just makes you more open to things.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's the worst that could happen? We could buy a Cabo timeshare. That's the worst that could happen. So tune in. We'll find out.
Now you're hosting timeshares.
Yeah. I'm like, it's a club. Come on by.
It's our merch. Yeah. Yeah. Tickets are free if you stick around.
Well, so we just have a few minutes left. I want to, anything else that you think would, well, you're doing the metaverse.
Yeah.
That was something that we wanted to talk about.
Yes. Yeah,
because so that's obviously like you're super forward thinking with that. That's
trying to be. Yeah. yeah. So you guys are at South by Southwest. So was I. I didn't, yeah. I watched your stand up there, but we didn't get a chance to talk. You crushed at the Would You Fuck Him?
Oh, thank you.
Dude, that
show
was
so fun.
So funny.
Keep hearing about this damn show.
It was a great show, dude. Jamar Neighbors.
Hurt people would fuck him. That's what I heard.
Jamar Neighbors on it, though. Like he didn't do stand up, but it was like such a good break. Like,
yeah.
From
yeah.
what was happening, he just did like a striptease instead of stand-up.
Have you seen his body?
So funny.
No.
He has the best body you've ever seen.
It's
he has
incredible.
Like a magic mic
so
body.
Fuck him?
All five of the panelists. He was the only person who went 5 for 5.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was great. He did a dance on everybody. It was super funny. But yeah, most of it, so why I went there, I got invited by Charlie, but why I went there was just to try to learn more about NFTs and metaverse and like things
yeah.
of what we're going like just web,
you and everybody
web,
else
web
it's
3
absolutely
web 3 like what's next. And I had been talking about this for a while before I even got hired. I shared this information with Amelia and Scott, the owners of New York Comedy Club. I was like, this I think is what's going to be next, and if we're able to capitalize on this, I feel like we can do a lot of cool shit. So I got introduced to this platform called You Are Nowhere. Not mm-hmm. to be confused with Nowhere Comedy Club. They're very different. But mm-hmm. You Are Nowhere is a platform for things in the metaverse. And the way that they're doing it is you don't need an Oculus. You don't need any extra
right.
equipment besides your computer with Google Chrome.
I think so many people, like I didn't even know that that was an option.
Right.
That seems like a huge barrier to entry.
100%. So. Yeah, because a lot of people
you
also
heard it here first.
A lot of people also think that Facebook invented the metaverse or it's theirs.
Right.
Like it's not. They just are very smart and they named their
branded
company
themselves.
Meta.
Yeah.
So yeah. Which is like
Facebook is. I don't know about very smart, but
they're very smart.
They're crazy.
They have all our information. They're very smart.
Fucking insane.
Yeah.
Unless it's another country, then they can just exploit those people and
yeah.
no problem.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
No, but so I wanted to do this show, and I was like, let's figure it out. I met with the people from You Are Nowhere. We did our first one, and the difference is like I'm not trying to put the comics into something different that they aren't normally doing. So mm-hmm. It's a regular show if you're a comic. The only difference is if you're hosting, you just have to bring up the metaverse to acknowledge them.
Okay, that's interesting because that, I mean, would be insane as a performer to try to
exactly and it's not the technology's not
this
there
isn't
yet.
Reality I can see you
the technology's not there yet, so it's like you could see people
yeah
with
that's
the VR,
actually
which is wild, but like it's just not there yet because you have to wear a headset, so it's like I don't want to do that version of it yet. So my version is, you know, like this is the 1.1, it's not the 2.0
sure,
yet.
Sure.
We're 1.1 and it's a you're on stage as a comic, it's a normal show, and then in the actual the You Are Nowhere, I have a club with posters, like all the comedians that are performing have posters on the wall that have click-through links to all their social media, to their specials, cool. whatever they have going on. You can move around in the actual space, and everything is directional audio. So if you move closer or further away, I can have a conversation with you face to face in it. And then if I move away from you, I can't hear you. Same thing with the stage. If you move closer to stage, you can hear it move further back.
So, I did one show like that. It might have even been the same platform.
Yeah,
but it was
probably,
like,
was it through Candy?
No, it wasn't through Candy, but it could have been. It was, oh my God, I'm forgetting her name. She works at Stand Up New York now. Nastya?
Lou?
No. No, it wasn't Lou. It doesn't matter. Point being, I've done one like that, and it was really weird because you could literally go in the back and like have a separate conversation
yep.
with like another comic who was on the show.
Yep.
And then go up on the stage and perform. So, and then I also did one in Animal Crossing, And that was bananas because we were animals on stage and you got to make jokes about that. But then everything else didn't really work because if you referenced yourself.
Yeah, I think ours went really well. It just it's a more immersive than just watching on YouTube because you can be with other people in there. I had 83 people on the first one that came to watch the show.
That's awesome. Which is,
like, I think really good.
Yeah.
I mean, their platform can only do like 150 right now.
Yeah.
So 83 I think is awesome for a very first, and I like convincing people to do it because that's the hardest part, is getting them to like come and actually like, they're like, what the fuck is this? Like, and you know, people have like a very negative connotation of what the metaverse is and what NFTs are and all this thing, because it's been, you know, hijacked by like crypto bros and things like that, or like they just, people don't understand what it actually is and what it will be. But yeah, the first one went great. The second one went really well. My next one is on the 5th of May.
Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, so that's going to be fun. Like, I'm excited.
That's so cool.
That's awesome. I'm behind the times. So
yeah, now you're like in a social media metaverse. Jesus Christ.
I was going to be like, so TikTok, here to stay?
Yeah. That's definitely here to stay. Actually,
how would you rank or just your general thoughts on the different social media platforms, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter? Like, do you see them rearranging? Do you see one being more valuable?
I think value comes into what you care about as a performer. You know, if you are Rachel McCartney, I don't know if you guys know Rachel McCartney.
Yes,
if
brilliant writer.
If you're her and you can write amazing tweets every day, you will get a following from that.
Yeah.
You know, like her writing is fucking great. Another Chicago, that's why.
Yeah.
But
you'll be able to succeed on Twitter. You know, if you can do things on TikTok like that aren't just stand-up, you can do stand-up and then you can do other things on TikTok, then do that. You know, it's whatever you feel most comfortable about, that's where you'll do the best. That's in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think all of them have...
LinkedIn for you, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at LinkedIn. It's
for real, though, you'd be surprised.
The worst thing
LinkedIn,
in the world.
LinkedIn has content. You can put content
on LinkedIn. Oh, I know.
She put one of my stand-up clips because it related to her job.
Yeah.
Did really well. This guy who works at Morgan Stanley like
tagged,
wrote a pretty good tag for one of his jokes. I was like, what is happening right now?
Think about the corporate gigs you could get from that.
That's true.
That's my other idea for the metaverse, is like, once I'm able to get the corporate side on it, it's going to be fucking ridiculous. But
yes. Oh my God. I mean, I've already done some events with like
Zoom
work events with.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Corporate Zoom shows paid my bills for 2020. So
yeah. Yeah, but this is going to be like a whole other thing. Anyway, but I think it all just switches. It all just depends on what you like. You know, you have to study each platform to figure out what works the best on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's different everywhere. I think that, like I was saying with shorts on YouTube, that's something that they've definitely like kicked up. TikTok has changed everybody's fascination, especially like because they had to rearrange the size of each clip. So like it went from, what's it, 9x16 or whatever for TikTok, so it takes up the whole phone screen versus everything else was
squares,
16x9 or no squares. I remember on Reddit it used to be a thing, it was a common thing where downvote for vertical video,
right?
And now it's like, why do I have to turn, why is this why isn't this,
remember Schultz was telling everybody to turn their phone on or whatever. So like so I think like with YouTube doing that now just shows you like how many people are just on their phone doing this versus, but I think just study what you like, you know, learn every platform and then just pay attention to them. You can put something on everywhere. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, that was the other thing.
I'm throwing it out there for everywhere and seeing what works, but study what you like. You know, I think YouTube is the biggest, right? YouTube's got
that's
two,
what I'm calling me scrolling,
it.
Doom scrolling TikTok is studying. I'm just studying what I like right now.
Yeah.
3 hours
research,
later.
Yeah.
But start following like the people that are.
You're right.
Like the people that do things on like the coaches for influencer coaches or whatever. The people that tell you like what to do, because there's a lot of good information on
there. No, you're totally right. I'm just watching that girl make the stupid salmon recipe. You guys aren't on that side? Okay.
Not on that one.
So then make fun of the person making the salmon recipe.
No, it's delicious. Like, there's nothing to make fun of there. Oh, okay. She's a genius.
All right. So I watch like,
she's a gift.
I watch Bon Appetit on YouTube for cooking, because their content is incredible. So it just depends on what you like as far as social media. One value more than the other. Like you look at Drybar. Drybar gets fucking 20 million views on Facebook.
Yeah.
you know.
Well, and that's also the
you have to bleep out the fucking. Right. Gets effing 25.
Am I swearing
years.
Too much? I feel
no,
bad.
No.
I just drive ours notoriously clean. Yeah,
I know, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the other part is like, what demographic would you be best suited for, and like kind of shifting one way or another. Obviously, Facebook, you know, boomers.
But there's still some value in Facebook.
No one's on Facebook but you and the comics and older people.
Well, that Italian guy, the Italian mathematician. Like, you want to be friends on Facebook? I was like, what?
And then, well, actually, that's true in other countries.
I also think you're thinking city too. Like, you got to think there's a lot of people that aren't living in cities that are on Facebook.
But it's like
there's some people blowing up on Facebook.
You have cousins your age that are just on Facebook. They might be on Instagram too, but they're on Facebook every day as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, giving the broadness. But Gen Z is going to be primarily on TikTok. They don't really care about Instagram as much,
right,
by and large.
Yeah.
So tailoring maybe a little bit more to that. I guess just
YouTube
everything.
YouTube
just seems like across the board.
Yeah, it's the biggest. Their platform is incredible. They just they've been pushing lately their version of Patreon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so they have their you can.
Which
join
why them. Did that Finally. Take them so long? Well, what the idiots. What a whiff!
They did it like 3 years ago. They launched it, but they were taking too much of a percentage. They wanted 30%, so not a lot of people signed up versus Patreon.
They should
like
have
five
just
to 10.
They should have just started low, killed everyone else. But made a monopoly, gone to the SEC.
It's still doing well, though. Like, so, I mean, they're so far ahead, they're not going anywhere, and they're still growing every day. So it's just like they're going to be here forever.
Yeah.
And now they made another avenue for people to make money, content creators to make money, which is great.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
And the monetizable, that's the thing about YouTube. It's the only one that's really monetizable. It's frankly. Unless you're willing to hawk teas.
What's
that's
weird.
Not true. All of them do now.
Really? Yeah, Instagram's that... Oh,
you can make money
Facebook
on Instagram 100%. You can make money on TikTok. Once you get 10,000 followers, you can make money on TikTok. Yeah.
What's interesting...
10.1.
What's interesting is it almost seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, getting a Netflix special or getting a special on HBO, awesome. Not maybe as valuable if you do it yourself on YouTube and it does, like, takes off.
I have a friend. He told me yesterday he's at like 60,000 views on his special that he put out. And he was like, do I sell this now? I was like, dude, YouTube. I was like, put it on YouTube. Because you have everybody has access to it. And you're just trying to sell tickets, you know?
Like, right, exactly.
And you're
versus like some like.
You're
you
trying
know.
To put it on Amazon Prime and it gets buried. You know, like you look at Ali Wong, and one of the best comics right now. And she gets a Netflix special and it's on the page for a day.
Exactly.
You know, it's like.
Yeah.
So you could if she put that up on YouTube, she would. Probably be at 20 million views by now.
I guess it depends on what your goal is. Like, obviously, Netflix just such a, or those are just such, you know, career check marks. So
sure. It's like JFL. It's like,
you're like, it's fucking cool. Yeah. But on the flip side, putting it online has better reach potential, at least.
Yeah, it definitely does. It has definitely better reach potential. So I think it's all part of it. You can do a lot on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you can make a lot on YouTube. You can make a lot of money from YouTube.
Yeah.
You can. Well, yeah.
Do you have any advice you'd give to young comics listening to this? 1 year, 2 years in, 5 years in?
To me.
Yeah, to Laura. Actually, can you tell Laura what she's doing
to
wrong?
Do?
No, I think just keep working. I think it's just like anything. You just have to keep doing it and keep doing
hustle
it. And
culture,
figure out what you like. And
but if I don't want to do that, what can I do?
Yeah.
Then you're not going to succeed. All right.
No, we'll just cut that part out.
Yeah. I think that's, I know that's like a shitty answer probably.
No, you're
but
totally
it's
right.
It's just like you have to just keep doing it and keep working. And then don't be closed off to new ideas.
Yeah. That's definitely been something I feel like I've taken away even more.
I've just watched myself underestimate every new fad at every turn and come in 12 months late.
TikTok won't be
like,
a thing.
I don't need to be
it's
tweeting my
dancing.
Jokes. I got to save them for the stage. Like, truly, just like all
just,
these things I was just
so
a little
bit late
to. You're
telling me just do the opposite of what Matt said?
Yeah.
But there's no, I feel like there's no late.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know, like you.
But there's a benefit to being early. And that's kind of what I'm seeing with Instagram right now. I shouldn't say too much, but there's been a sweet spot on some of the social media platforms at this current moment, and if
well,
you're
reels,
aggressive
with reels,
yeah.
Everybody should be posting reels, and then eventually it'll turn. But that's what I'm saying. Just don't be closed off to new things. But reels have been out over a year now, so it's like,
yeah.
I think that it just you'll see what they're promoting more, and they're just trying to compete with TikTok. So, and everybody tells me that Instagram has like a better turnover rate for ticket sales, like you can get more sales off Instagram. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I just don't think people know how to promote themselves on TikTok.
That might be true. I will say that when we've booked like people with huge TikTok followings, it doesn't really
translate. Because I don't think that they know how to promote
themselves. How to like have like my show's coming up.
If you look TikTok at like, doesn't make it
TikTok
easy
just did
also.
Stories too. Oh, like okay, literally in the last few weeks they've added story capability. So that might completely change it. Because before it was like, so what are you going to do, a full TikTok about your upcoming show? Like maybe, but no, probably not.
Nimesh Patel, he does it the best way I've seen. He has his upcoming dates on a TikTok and he pins it to the top of
that's
his story.
Smart.
It's so smart.
So it works as a bio.
It's literally at the top, to of, the top of his people. First story. Yeah, 100%. You should look at everybody and you should
just steal.
It's steal like an artist. I don't know if you guys have read that by Austin Kleon, but that to me is like what you should do is you steal, make it your own, make it better.
Yeah.
That's how we all are here right now because somebody took some idea from it's everything. It's everything that you're around. Somebody has taken an idea from somebody else and just improved it. So I think that like you look at what he does on TikTok, it's so smart. Like he has posted all his things and he gets his following is ridiculous. He was the first comic that I saw with TikTok where I was like, okay, this is valuable. He sold out last year. He did 4 shows Monday and Tuesday at Zany's. And I was like, oh, okay. And then like I started to meet more people that were big on TikTok. And he's a great comic. So it's mm-hmm. awesome. And then he's just, but he's another guy that's not posting bits. He's just posting crowd work stuff, you know? Yeah.
God damn. All right. Fine. I guess we got to go like record.
I learned how to do crowd work.
You're great at crowd work. That's bullshit. Matt has so much damn content. It's annoying. It's like 10 years doing comedy or whatever.
There's a lot of people that 10 years doing comedy that don't have a lot of content.
That's true.
So.
That was the cool thing about Nimesh was that he's been doing comedy, I think, longer than me. And he was not very known up until he put a concerted effort into getting his stuff out there.
Yeah.
And
I think he's almost at a million followers on TikTok now.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
Well,
any place people can check you out? Anything you want
to
promote?
Yeah, go to the club,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, come to New York Comedy Club, newyorkcomedyclub.com. Come to a show. My Instagram
Metaverse.
Is BDMY, or sorry, BDMNYCC. I just changed it from BDMCHI.
Ah, got
I
it.
Had to move. Yeah. But yeah, come to a show, New York Comedy
and
Club.
And if you don't live in New York, still go to the Metaverse show.
Yeah,
can. There is literally no excuse. Okay, so we're trying to say Cinco de Mayo, you have plans now.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks so much for coming.
Thank
on.
You.
For
this is so fun.